Hello and welcome to Academy of Blues, a Chelsea FC podcast that is back in blue. After what is the shortest ever summer break, the Blues at Cobham are back to Premier League play, and with that, the Blues at Academy of Blues are too. In Super Frank Lampard's second season in charge, Chelsea kicked off their Premier League campaign with a Monday night win at Brighton and Hove Albion. After debutant Turbo Timo won a first half penalty, which Jorginho put away with a hop, skip and a jump, we were made to be nervous for a quick second because Brighton reminded us that despite 753 new signings, we still have the same keeper as we did last season. Thankfully, in what I think was a battle of the right backs, Reece James put NASA into shame by finding the perfect landing spot for a rocket of a shot. He followed that up with a corner kick which Kurt Happy Zuma put away, and a nervy game ended up being a comfortable win in the end. To talk the Brighton game, transfer window, and Liverpool ahead, Daniel Gonzalez is back from his international break. I heard that Raul Jimenez kept you out of the starting lineup this week, though. So how are you doing, Daniel?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. It's okay. Like every other Chelsea player, I pulled a hamstring, and so I was out of the match anyway. But
you know what? I'm glad that he kept you out of the lineup, because if you had played, you would have gotten injured even worse, because international breaks just tend to do that to us. So I'm just glad that you're back and you're ready to go, man.
If I had remembered to do my fantasy team that I was supposed to do, I would have put Raul Jimenez in there. And so
it's okay.
A little bit ashamed about that.
It's okay. We have set it so that the scoring starts in week two. So week one, you weren't expected to do that. It would have been a good practice round for you to do, just to kind of put your expectations out there and see how players perform, etc. But the scoring has not started, so you're not behind just yet. But make sure you get it done for this week.
I need to do that. I need to get on it. I know nothing about every other team in the Premier League. All I know is Chelsea. So
it's actually been a while since we've done a podcast, and it's been a while since we've hung out. Let me ask you this. In the off season, have you been, like, for me in the off season, it genuinely feels like a huge part of my life is missing, because there aren't games to watch every weekend or throughout the week. And there aren't those like news reports and analyses and podcasts coming out. Most of it is just transfer rumors and clickbait articles and stuff like that. So it feels like a huge part of my life is missing. How is it for you?
Well, I also follow the MLS a little bit, not as much as the Premier League for sure. But the upside about that is because their off seasons aren't at the same time. MLS is always playing during the summer break, but it always feels a little bit less alive, I guess, is the best way I could put it, compared to the Premier League. The Premier League, like, every player, you know so much about them. There's always interviews going up. There's always, like, there's so much to talk about in terms of Premier League transfers coming in and out. Like, you know every single player is an important part of the team. And it's not quite the same way with MLS. MLS, it's like that starting 11 you know, and everybody else is just kind of fodder for the bench. And there's not quite as much going on in the MLS as there is to the Premier League. So even like the offseason in the Premier League is exciting to me compared to anything that happens in MLS, to be honest.
It sounds like watching the MLS in the offseason is much like being too alive to die and too dead to live. Which
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, which is, I imagine, is a very weird thing. For me, during the offseason, I'm just pretty much all dead. So I'm happy to be back alive again. Pull off a classic resurrection. One of the things that I have been totally invested in over the past few weeks has been Tottenham Hotspur's All or Nothing documentary on Prime Video. Have you been into that at all?
I have not gotten a chance to watch it. I've seen bits and pieces of little bits of it, and I heard Pochettino's not in it as much as you would expect.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. Let me tell you what the best part is. The best part is so it's narrated by Tom Hardy, the one and the only. And in the very first episode, you see him approaching Daniel Levy, and he says, I'm here on behalf of Amazon Prime, and we would like to do a documentary where we follow the rest of the season. And Daniel Levy says, it's going to be extremely painful. And Tom Hardy goes, for you. And that was the best part of the whole show. And but in all seriousness, I think it's a joke. I also watched the Man City one that Amazon did. I thought that one was great, because in that one, you actually get a genuine look into the team, into the players' lives, into how Pep Guardiola prepares his team. But in this one, it was just, it feels like things happen and then the director and producers, they get some of the Tottenham players and Daniel Levy and Jose Mourinho, and they said, okay, we know that this happened yesterday. Can you like act it out for us again today so that we can capture it? That's what it felt like, because I don't know. I feel like you have to watch it in order to actually get that, but it just felt very fake. And then the other thing, this was glorious for me to watch, is Jose Mourinho. I don't feel like he knows how to give a team talk. He just goes in there and says a bunch of random words like we must believe, we must think. The most important thing is passion. Let's go out and win in the second half. Like, what? And then with Pep Guardiola in the Man City one, you get to see him like, you know, say, this is how they're going to attack us, but this is how we're going to like go around that. This is like, you actually get to see some tactics. So it's been glorious watching how much of, in many ways, just how not good it is. It's like a guilty pleasure of mine now.
Wow. I got to check it out for sure.
You
now.
Absolutely do.
Absolutely. The weird thing about Mourinho is that some players despise Mourinho and other ones will die for him. Like all those old guard of Chelsea, the John Terry and Drogba and Lampard, they all like love the guy to death. And that like his talks work for some players and just the opposite for others. It's the oddest thing.
Yeah, I think, to be completely frank, I just don't think that he was as good as... I don't think he was as good as he was back when he was managing Chelsea. And when he was managing Inter Milan, like some of those players would like die for him, you know, they'd do anything for him. But now it's completely changed. And I think it's I don't know, maybe it's because he was successful with both teams and he has a huge ego. And so, you know, he comes into, I don't know, whatever it might be. And I also know that like the dressing room has completely changed just across soccer from, you know, early 2000s. Up until now. Now you have like superstars and players that have much more of an influence than players did back then. And so managers can't come in and just like treat horribly the players that are favored in the dressing room, even if they're players that are not, you know, the best players in the team. So whatever. This is fast becoming a Jose Mourinho analysis podcast.
Jose Mourinho special.
Yeah. All or nothing. It's more nothing than all. So, listeners, welcome to Academy of Blues. It is good to have you back, or it's good to be talking to you again. Before we move forward, we want to let you know to subscribe to Academy of Blues, wherever you get your podcast, because this is the perfect time to do it. It's a brand new season. You have a new show to listen to, or a show that you're coming back to, and we're going to be at it all season long. So subscribe, follow us, and listen to every episode that we have. Also, you can send us any questions, emails, topics, all that good stuff by emailing academyofblues@gmail.com. And if you're on Instagram, follow us at Academy of Blues. A really exciting thing to talk about. The Blues are back in action. This is something that we've been waiting for, to be fair, not that long, but it felt like forever because with every signing that came in, we just got more and more and more excited. We'll talk about those signings in a second. But as I was watching this game that we played against Brighton and Hove Albion, which we ended up winning 3-1, it wasn't the best game ever. It wasn't the way that you would want to start a season typically. But taking into account everything that was going on, I think that we have to be pretty pleased. First and foremost, I feel like this was a completely different game from so many games that we had last season where we played so well, created so many chances, and still found a way to either draw or lose against a team that we should have beat. In this case, we created very little. I think we were actually outplayed by Brighton & Hove Albion, but it ended up being a fairly comfortable win. So my question to you is this what we should continue to expect for the next few months, or was this just going to be a one-off because the players are just not match fit yet?
The first games of the season are always, in my opinion, like the hardest to judge because everyone's coming back from like rustiness, that kind of, you know, the form that everyone's been building up for so long is kind of worn off by now. So like where teams are at the end of last season is not where they are at the beginning of the next one. And even though this one was a shorter break, you had new signings coming in, you had players leaving, and we still had a lot of injuries carrying over from last season. We had Kovacic out on, not injury, but on shenanigans that we won't get into now, but Kovacic is out for this game. Pulisic out, still an injury, still waiting for him to return. Aspie still recovering, and he was on the bench, but made a quick appearance. And two new players with Timo and Havertz coming into the side. And so it's a combination of rustiness, and it's a combination of new players that needed to gel and work together very well. And personally, I'm not too surprised that we played like we did. The best part of our game, which was weird to me, is the defense actually looked fairly solid in this game compared to every other game in the past. I thought that Christensen and Zuma worked pretty well together. The combination of them, I don't know. We've been struggling to find the right combination, but I feel like they both stepped it up a lot just to try to win that place that's inevitably going to go next to Thiago Silva once he comes into the side. And just from there on, the midfield felt off. And I'm sure we're going to get into specific players later, but it seemed like there were players who still had a lot of rust carrying into this game. And though our attack was kind of three players who have not played together on a club before, I thought Timo Werner was great, but none of them really seemed like they, you know, when players have played long enough together, they can kind of predict the movements of other players and kind of pass it into the space where they know they're going to go. And none of them had that movement and fluidity between them just yet. But the fact that we won 3-1 despite that, I think is a great sign for the future.
Yeah, I think you said a lot of good things there. First and foremost, any team that wants to challenge for the title needs to know how to like grind out wins. They're not all going to be pretty. They're not all going to be easy and smooth. There will be days when, you know, where you go on a rainy night away to Stoke and you have to be able to get those wins because that makes a huge difference at the end of the season. The second thing is if the team can get wins when it's not playing well, then that's a good sign because as time goes, the players gel with one another, the manager has more time in order to implement some of his tactics and what he wants to see. We start to see more and more of that. You know, we're going to have more opportunities to play like how we should be playing and could be playing in the future. And so to get the win right away, it's great. As far as our center backs go, I think they were the men of the match, men of the match. Quite frankly, our entire defense, except for Marcos Alonso, who might have been one of our worst players. I know people are out to get Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Kai Havertz, but I think Marcus Alonso getting skinned by 19-year-old Tariq Lamptey over and over and over again, it was just like if anyone was going to either create a chance or score on us, it was going to come from their right back. And you have this experienced Premier League winner, Marcus Alonso, who can't deal with this 19-year-old. It was... For me, that was probably one of the most frustrating parts of the game. And I know that Ben Chilwell is here, and hopefully it'll look completely different with him back there. But with the exception of Alonso, our back, the other back three were incredible. Reece James obviously ended up getting that goal. And then Zuma and Christensen, you said it, they were playing like they were auditioning for that spot next to Thiago Silva, which is great to see, I think, because we need that. We need people who are dedicated. I mean, Christensen and Zuma were doing things that we would see John Terry do every week, which is just like completely throw his body in front of an incoming shot. Zuma got injured in one of them. Christensen, he had one where he was like kind of turned away and it hit him in the top half of his body. So I thought that that was great. Happy to see that. And I have a suspicion that... I have a suspicion that over the past week, Frank Lampard really focused on the defense more than he did some of our possession play and stuff like that because we were completely outplayed. I thought it was ironic when you have, you know, players like N'Golo Kante and new signings like Havertz and Werner. I thought the best two players on the field were Tariq Lamptey and Reece James, two Chelsea Academy products. That was probably the best that I've seen Reece James play. He had one mistake in the game, and that's when Lewis Dunk had a free header in the back post, and he missed him there. But he had a nearly flawless performance other than that. And so it's exciting to see that there are improvements made in areas with the players that were already here last season, which you would expect, right? Because they've been with Lampard for a year. They're the ones who know how he plays, what he wants to do, and all that stuff. Now, there is one player who has been here for more than a season who is not doing so hot. And we'll keep this part short because I can't imagine we'll say anything new that we haven't said before. But let's talk about our second manager at Chelsea Football Club, Kepa Arrizabalaga. He didn't do anything to cover himself in glory. And from what I can remember, he had two real shots in the game that he should have saved. He saved one. He let the other one in, and it was under his fingers. In my opinion, no Premier League goalkeeper should be conceding a goal like that.
You know, with my sister was so mad about that she later sent me a screenshot of just like, without words, without a caption or anything, it's just Kepa diving, and it's just the ball going right under his hand. You could see that he clearly could get there in time, but at this point, yeah, you're right. There's not much else to say about Kepa as a kid. He just seems like he's low on confidence. It feels similar to how Morata felt at Chelsea right before he left, where it's like, you know, this player does have skill. They're a professional player. They've shown flashes of brilliance in the past, but they've never really proven it on a week-to-week basis. And just how low they are in confidence at the moment, it doesn't seem like there's any way for Kepa to come back at this point.
Completely agree. And I wish that it was different, because I like Kepa. I don't know why I like him, but I like him. I think it's just because he's a Chelsea keeper, and I'm bound to like Chelsea players until something happens. And so I like him, and it's a shame. But with reports coming out that Edouard Mendy, or Mondi, whatever, however you say his French name, with reports coming out that we're close to getting him, I think his time at Chelsea is done. Mendy is a keeper who's 6'5", and from what I've been reading, he is very highly rated, especially by Petr Cech. And I think at this point, we just have to trust the greatest goalkeeper that we've had in the modern era. The thing that I thought was interesting, I don't know if you got to get a look at Frank Lampard's post-match interview, but he totally defended Kepa and said that he saw a lot of good things in him. He was more confident. Yeah, he had that one shot that he could have saved. But he really backed him and completely denied the incoming Edouard Mendy. And I think it's probably because even if Mendy signs, let's say, today or tomorrow, chances are he's probably going to have to quarantine for 10 to 14 days. And so he definitely won't be available for the next 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 games. And so Kepa will have to play a role. And so I thought that was interesting that Lampard did that.
I do want to shift the topic from Kepa to another player that I think had a not-so-great game. And that's going to be Mr. RLC himself, Loftus-Cheek. And it does hurt to say, for me, because there's a lot of good qualities about Loftus-Cheek. But I, as my personal opinion, for anybody out there who's listening, I don't think Loftus-Cheek is going to make it at Chelsea at this point. And he's been around however many managers. He's been giving chances by Conte, by Sadi, by Lampard now, and he's had those moments. He's had like games, and he's had like patches of form throughout that time, but he can't stay uninjured long enough to really cement himself in the team. And now that this is a team full of youngsters, like brimming with like kids with like potential who are willing to do that, you're seeing like 19-year-olds, 20, 21-year-olds who are all bursting again to the team. Loftus-Cheek doesn't seem quite as young as he used to be.
Yeah, I think the important thing to remember is I feel like the one genuine opportunity that he's had at Chelsea was in Mauricio Sarri's season. And from November, when Sarri started playing him, all the way until the end of the season, I thought he was one of the best players in our team. He was scoring goals, creating assists. He had a hat-trick in the Europa League against, I can't remember who. He scored in the semifinal of the Europa League against Frankfurt at home. And there was a real link-up play between him and Eden Hazard. I think he ended the whole season with, I believe, somewhere between 11 to 12 goals, which is a fantastic return for any midfielder. And he definitely was taking his chance. The one chance that he was given that season, he was taking it with like everything he had. And then it's such a shame that it was like a preseason in the United States or a postseason friendly that got him injured, which is such a shame. I definitely see what you're saying. I wonder if he would benefit from another loan where there's just not much of an expectation from him, from the Chelsea board, team, and fans. Like when he played at Crystal Palace, he was their player of the year, player of the season. And so I wonder if he went to a team like Palace or maybe even a team that's being threatened or that's a team that's going to be fighting relegation. If he went to that team and just started somewhere between 25 to 30 games, I feel like that would make a huge difference if it ever happens. And I think at this point he needs that because he's not going to get that at Chelsea with Havertz coming in, with Mason Mount being almost undroppable by Lampard and Pulisic coming to be indispensable in the way that he is. the chances are going to be fewer and fewer. The only thing that gives me hope about RLC this season is the fact that basically this week that we're in right now is our only week where we don't have a midweek game between now and the new year. We're literally going to be playing every 3 days or every 3 to 4 days, which part of me is excited for because we don't have to wait a whole week for the team. But it also makes me go like, oh, wow, Lampard's going to have like 22 players that are like pretty much 22 starters that are going to be playing every other week. Or every week, rather, just not every 4 days. And so because of that, it makes me think he has a chance.
That's true. But I feel like it's the same. We've been around this circus before. We've been around hyping up RLC. We've been around, you know, he starts to get into the team, get more minutes, have his time. And then he has his inevitable injury that puts him back on the back burner. He's out for 6 to 8 months, something like that. He comes back. He's back in the training. He's getting ready again. And as soon as he starts to show his form, he's injured again. And it's kind of, you have to look at that as like part of the player at that point is how prone they are to injuries. And it's like one of the reasons why Mason Mount does start every single game is because he rarely gets injured. It's how many games did he miss in that season?
Through injury, I don't think he missed any through injury. He was subbed out in that Valencia game in the Champions League because he got tackled by Coquelin, who was just still mad about Eden Hazard putting him on a bike and taking him down. A couple of years ago.
And one of my favorite goals of all time.
Absolutely. And he was back the following weekend, I think, against Liverpool and played all 90 minutes. Yeah, so I definitely see what you're saying with RLC. I'm still rooting for him. I still want him to make it at Chelsea, even if he's not going to be a guaranteed starter. I want him to be one of our squad players. I want him to be able to win trophies at Chelsea because he's one of the first ones that has come through the academy after John Terry. It's him and Christensen. But he's been here for even for a longer period of time. Christensen joined, I think, when he was 16. RLC when he was 8. So definitely want him to make it. So let me get your thoughts on our new boys, Kai Havertz. Didn't really look that sharp and didn't look
man of the match. Kai Havertz, he was great.
and I thought he was going to get banished. He probably is. I just haven't checked. I thought he was going to get banished into the world of memes. With that one miskick that he had where he like dribbled for maybe 10 yards and he had a Paul Pogba kind of pass into the stands. It wasn't glorious at all. He didn't look up to speed. But Timo Werner.
Some sort absolutely of pun did. Timo, okay. I know that you said Reece James would have been your man of the match, correct, Reece James?
Yeah, he got a goal and assist.
Yeah, it's true. It's pretty good. But despite not getting on the score sheet, not having an assist to his name, my best player on the pitch was Timo Werner. He was everywhere. He was making runs. He was linking up with other players. He was dropping deep at times. There were times where he's all the way back, like in line with Reece James at some points, or they were like passing back and forth. And he was involved everywhere. And for that penalty that he won, he does get injured in that. And you can see in his interview, which I loved, after the game where he wraps up his leg and he talks about how he had to play against three massive defenders, which he's never done before. So three defenders and Lamptey is the other short defender out there.
Yeah.
But I thought Timo Werner was everything we've been missing in a center forward for I don't know how long at this point, since Diego Costa.
Yeah, completely agree. He doesn't necessarily have the physique of a Diego Costa to be able to like fight it out with big defenders. But he definitely was a headache to them. The thing that frustrated me watching Timo Werner yesterday was obviously I'm not a professional player, but I've watched the game enough and played it enough in just whatever level I've played in to know that if you have a guy who is as fast as he is and there's a lot of space in front of him, you put him through and you just say go. And there were two incidents. One was with Ruben Loftus-Cheek. And the second one was with Ross Barkley. Ross Barkley, man. I'm not going to get into
Ross Barkley is the worst combination. I mean, you can't play Ross Barkley in a game with Pulisic and Werner because they're both going to be like head in their hands the entire game with him.
My goodness. And so that was frustrating to me. It's just like, how do they not see this? Just put him through. The defenders aren't going to be able to catch up to him. Anyways, yes, he looked very, very, very sharp. That's really exciting to me. And this was only his first game. You can see that he's been with the squad for a little over a month or a month and a half at this point. Oh, and by the way, he did get an assist to his name because if you win a penalty, you do get an assist, which is completely weird. So get this, when it comes to assists, it makes no sense. if you win a penalty, you get an assist. If you take a shot, the keeper saves it, and somebody else puts in the rebound, you get an assist. But if you make a pass, like say a through ball, and it even slightly deflects another player, you do not get the assist. It's weird. It doesn't make sense. But he got the assist anyways. So, he definitely had a very exciting debut. Let's talk about the man of the match real quick.
Here's Reece James going to try his luck. Oh, what a goal from him. Absolute firecracker from Reece James. No way in the world any goalkeeper is stopping that.
It felt like Tariq Lamptey had a point to prove, saying, Frank Lampard, you shouldn't have let me go. Based on that, Reece James was like, I also have a point to prove, and completely justified the sale of Tariq Lamptey with that incredible goal. I tried to kind of just mentally picture pretty much all of our goals last season, and I cannot remember a better goal than that all season long.
Let me throw this out there. Tomori against Wolves.
Okay, I thought about that one. That was the only goal that we scored that was from a fairly similar distance. The reason I'm going to say the Reece James one was better is because let's say Tomori takes that shot 10 times. I'm confident in saying 5 to 6 times the keeper saves that. Rui Patricio did not do a good job with that shot. This Reece James one, no keeper in the world would save that. You would have to have 2 keepers and have one of them stationed all the way by the post in order to save that. It was powerful. It was high. It was off to the side. It was the perfect shot.
It was a great shot. It'll be hard to see another goal like that in this season.
But quite frankly, it's interesting because he does need to do more of that. And if you go back and look at some of his Wigan Athletic highlights when he was on loan with them, he has scored at least 2 more goals that are almost identical to the one that he scored yesterday. And he's going to have to keep doing that if he's ever going to get a shot at playing right back for England, because Trent Alexander-Arnold is only 1 year older than him. Kieran Trippier, I believe, is only 3 or 4 years older than him, if I'm not mistaken. So as of right now, he's like the highest place. He's probably ranked 3rd, if we're being generous to him, because Wan-Bissaka is also in that lineup.
Yeah, that's right. That's tough. England are stacked and, at right back.
Yeah, and Kyle Walker, too.
I'm trying to think of the U.S.'s right back, and it's I can't even
Christian
think.
Pulisic.
Just put Christian Pulisic in every position at this point. Oh, yeah. We almost did not talk about Havertz, or at True. Least specifically. I thought Havertz was not the worst player on the pitch. That's something. But he didn't have a memorable performance, but he did just join the squad. It has not been that long, and he's still getting used to everything. I'm not even sure if he even knows every player's name at this point, so it'd be hard to tell him, like, if you're trying to call a player to pass to you, he's just got to shout, hey, pass to me, you know? It's got to be tough to play a game so early.
Right. I would argue that if Pulisic wasn't ready, if Kovacic wasn't suspended, he probably wouldn't have started. I think that Lampard, and if Ziyech was also available, Havertz wouldn't have started. I don't think so, because this game came way too soon for him. He was out on that international duty, came back, signed on a Friday, started training on his own on Saturday and Sunday. And then I think on Monday for the first time joined the rest of the team. And half the team wasn't even there because a lot of our players are international players. And so it's like, I think he probably had 3 decent days of training. And yeah, definitely Havertz and Ruben Loftus-Cheek look like they were... It's almost like it felt like just a pickup game. And somebody said, hey, we only have 9 players. We need 2 more. You guys want to hop in? That's what it felt like. And with that said, though, there are a couple of things that I did enjoy about Havertz. One was he ran back about 80 yards to win a tackle.
That was
which I was so nervous about, because for half of it, he looked like he was just going to let the guy go, but he didn't. That was good. And then there was another one where he was involved in a play that had Timo, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, and Kai Havertz. They almost passed it out of the back, and on the counterattack, RLC should have released Timo for a one-on-one with the keeper, but that didn't end up happening. And so, not the flashiest, not the most memorable debut, but that's probably the only time we're ever going to see a performance like that from him, because he's only going to get better. He's only 21 years old. He's been living in a new country for the past 7 days. We'll be fine. I don't think it's time to panic.
We won't hold it against him.
Yeah. That being said, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't start against Liverpool. If Pulisic comes in, I can see Pulisic, Werner, and Giroud up top. Mount, Kovacic, Conte in the middle, and Havertz would just have to come into the game a little bit later on. I would be fine with that. I don't think he's necessarily ready to be playing with the rest of the team. So, we shall see.
I was going to ask you what you thought the lineup was going to be, but you've already said it, so you're ahead of me on that one.
My guess is Frank Lampard's still going to go with Christensen and Zuma. In that Liverpool team, the only like real giant they have is Virgil van Dijk. Their three forwards are fairly short in height, so I think Christensen should be able to do fine physically against them. And then on corner kicks, just put Kurt Zuma on van Dijk. I think they need to do that. But yeah, my guess is that back two, he's going to keep the same. I can see Aspie playing at left back because Alonso just looked terrible. And Chilwell's not going to be ready for another couple of weeks. James should start at right back. I don't think he could ever be dropped after scoring one and assisting one. It seems like he's our corner kick taker now as well.
Yeah, that's right.
He took all the corners that we had.
Yeah. No William.
Our lineup is going to be a 4-3-3, which we do need to play. We need to match Liverpool in midfield. That's their weakness. We need to dominate that. And then we need to be clinical in our games. Against Liverpool, we've done well every single time we've played them. And I know we conceded 5 the last time we played them, but we scored 3. And they're vulnerable. We can score on them. I saw a stat today that made me so happy. It said since the beginning of June, it listed 3 keepers. Emi Martinez for Arsenal, Kepa for Chelsea, and Alisson for Liverpool. And out of the 3 of them since the beginning of June, Alisson has the worst shots faced / goals conceded ratio.
Really?
Yep.
That's pretty bad.
Yep. He conceded 3 against us. He conceded 4 against Man City. He conceded 3 against Leeds this weekend. So...
Did you get a chance to catch that game? I watched, I don't remember exactly what I was doing, but I watched maybe about 20 minutes of it or so in between all the goals. Like I watched that middle chunk from like the 30 minute goal to like the 60 something minute goal. I watched like, I only was able to catch that. And then, you know, it all kicked off right afterwards.
I got to watch the whole game. And quite frankly, I think that game should have ended in a draw because everything that Liverpool did, Leeds were able to match it. Liverpool scored from 2 penalties, which at least one of them was completely avoidable. But Leeds scored 3 times from open play. And what I realized was one of the things that they did was just when they were pushing Liverpool and when they were attacking them, they did it in numbers, which I expect us to do because that's how we've been doing it for the past season. So my feeling is that this game that we're going to see at the Bridge is going to be a goal fest. I don't know who's going to win, if I'm being honest, but it should be an exciting game. And it should be a game where Liverpool are vulnerable because they just don't look the same at all. Since winning the league, they have not looked the same. And you can forgive them for that, especially last season towards the end. But they got beaten by Arsenal in the Community Shield. And the other thing about Liverpool is their starting 11 is probably the best in the league. But when you go to bring on subs for them, I don't think that they have any subs that can change the game. Fabinho is definitely a game changer when he comes on. Naby Keita could be. But beyond that, anybody they bring in, either across the back or across the front 3, or even in midfield, is a downgrade from their starting 11. And so if the game isn't going their way within the first, you know, 50, 60 minutes, it's very possible that they won't be able to come up with answers for it. The only thing about Liverpool is they do one thing well, which is just press teams until teams relent. They do that really, really well.
Hey, it's really hard to beat that Liverpool press. And... it's going to be an exciting... I think Timo is especially going to be out there trying to prove something to them after they just skipped out on taking him when he was ready, ripe for the taking. One other thing that he mentioned in his post-match interview, Werner did, was at the very end, the reporter asked him, hey, do you think you'll be fit for the Liverpool game after his like kind of like muscle injury from the penalty? And he said, of course, you're always fit for those kind of games. I was like, that's the kind of mentality we need. Man, I want to get a Werner jersey just based on that interview and that game. One more thing, it's not technically related to Chelsea, but it is a little bit. Did you see that Branislav Ivanovic has signed for West Brom?
How old is he? He must be at least 40 years old at this point.
Like, and he's playing for a Premier League team.
My guess is they're probably going to play him as a center back as opposed to a right back. But I actually personally think it's fantastic because Ivanovic obviously is Chelsea through and through. Love the team. Won the Champions League with them. Won the, he was part of that Carlo Ancelotti team in 09 and 10. And he's going to West Bromwich Albion. And it seems like Conor Gallagher is also going to be at West Bromwich Albion for the season and on loan. And so like that is already getting me excited that just there is going to be somebody else there who knows Chelsea, who he can talk to, who he can learn from about the mentality and things like that. Ivanovic is a winner for sure. And so, and I'm also just personally excited to see more of him because when he's playing in the Russian league, how often do I watch Russian league highlights? You know, never. Yeah.
We're going to play West Brom in just a couple matches.
I know. We're playing them in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, 2 weeks. That'll be exciting. I wish, I mean, not like right now, but I wish we were in an environment where there would be fans at the stadium because I'd love to see the reception he would get at Stamford Bridge. Or is it at Stamford Bridge? Or is it
at, no, it's at the Hawthorns.
Either way, we'll see him at Stamford Bridge at some point.
Yeah, so and maybe by the time they come back to Stamford Bridge to play us in the return leg, fans might be in there. So,
I hope so.
Yeah. So, bringing it back to the whole Liverpool game and previewing it in a very disorganized way, as we do here.
We're going back and forth.
Yeah. How are you feeling about it? And give us your predicted lineup.
Oh, man. You know I'm terrible with lineups. I always get them wrong.
Yeah, I'd like to mention that I texted you and asked you what your predicted lineup was going to be for the Brighton game, and you put Kovacic in there.
I did. So that was pretty bad. All right.
Yeah, we're not going to let that one go.
We're gonna. All right, for Liverpool, I'm gonna say that we're gonna go 3-4-3. John Terry, Gary Cahill, and Azpilicueta.
Bring back the Conte. Mourinho would have a meltdown. He'd come at Lampard and say Lampard is using Antonio Conte players.
Okay, we're going to have Moses running down the wing once again. Gosh, we only got basically 1.5 seasons of that, kind of, because Conte's second season kind of fizzled out with the Moses experiment, and he didn't start with Moses at the beginning. So we got just the shortest glimpse of Moses as, like, top-tier Premier League player, and now he's somewhere. I don't know exactly.
You have the Makélélé role, and in a 3-4-3, you have the Victor Moses role. He played just enough for me to reference that right wing back role as the Victor Moses role.
But getting back to Liverpool again, I'm going to say that I think that he sticks. Oh, no. I think he's going to, I'm going to go with you. I was going to say that he sticks with Marcus Alonso because I think Marcus Alonso's played some good games. In this game, I think that Lampard yanks him out of there and does put Aspie in there with Reece James on the other side. And I know that he's been looking for that center back pairing. And if Christensen and Zuma do well, he's going to stick him back in there. He's going to have faith in them. There's nobody really to switch out with Kepa just yet. So Kepa's still in goal. We have so many. I don't think he's gonna start Pulisic. Even if Pulisic is back and ready, I think he's gonna save Pulisic on the bench. That's what he did in that 5-3 last season, where Pulisic came on and had like a great showing there. And it's gonna be a similar thing where if we can hang on to not conceding too many goals in the first half and just wait for Pulisic to come on for like 30 minutes or something like that, at tired defenders if Timo's already running off of them, they're already going to be tired. Is it going to... Gomez is fit, right? It's going to be Gomez and Van Dijk, most likely. So if they're already tired from Timo running circles around them, imagine Pulisic coming on and, you could see the flashbacks that Trent Alexander-Arnold's going to have after seeing Pulisic come on again. So I'm going to say that it's going to be Kovacic, Conte, and Mount in the middle. Wait. Yeah. Kovacic, Conte, and Mount. I'm going to say it's Timo. I don't know. I don't think he's going to put Giroud in. But he doesn't seem to like Hudson-Odoi at the moment. This is a long, rambling starting 11 that I'm throwing at you right now, because I'm thinking it through as I go. All right, here's my prediction. Here we go. Timo up top, Hudson-Odoi on the left, Havertz on the right. Let's go.
Okay. I like it. I mean, I don't like it, but I like that it's different. I don't think anybody's going to come up with that prediction, but I would never start with that lineup. I don't... So you know that I love the Men in Blazers show that's on every Monday on NBC. That's a plug right there for them. So I should get some royalties.
Yeah, anyway. It was a sponsorship, please. Yes. Yeah. We're right all the time.
We can be the boys in Blazers. We're not men, really,
We're still in school. We're still at the academy.
Oh, yeah. In yesterday's show, they had Jurgen Klopp as their one of their guests. And, it's an American show. So obviously they're going to try and push an American agenda into it as much as possible and talk about Christian Pulisic, that man from Hershey, Pennsylvania. I thought it was hilarious. Jurgen comes in, they're talking about all kinds of different things. And one of them just says, The last time you played against Chelsea, Christian Pulisic came off the bench, and he says, and he did some naughty things to the Liverpool backline. And they show you, and they show you a clip of, you know, Pulisic just destroying that line. And then there's that one shot of Jurgen Klopp's face when Pulisic scores that goal, where he just had a very dumbfounded look on his face. They showed him that shot of him with a dumbfounded look on his face and said, what was going through your head? And Jurgen Klopp literally said, I was just glad that he didn't start from the beginning of the game. And so I think Frank absolutely needs to start him. He was supposedly sort of pushing to be fit for this game. He did travel with the squad and for the game against Brighton. So I would expect that he's fully fit this weekend. And so because of that, I'm saying that it's going to be Pulisic, Werner, and really Giroud up top. And I do think that we need Giroud because there needs to be somebody who can go up and win headers against the back line of that Liverpool team. And Giroud is also fantastic for Timo Werner to play off of too.
So let me ask you about that specific front three. Would you go with like a straight three, like across the front, like right and left wingers, and then Giroud up top? Or are you going with like a Pulisic in behind playing, and like Giroud and Werner kind of playing up top off each other?
I think
because, you know, Pulisic prefers the left. Timo, if he's going to play winger, he's going to drift to the left. He's going to be like left-sided focus there.
I think so too. But I think he should just start Pulisic on the right and encourage him to come to drift in as much as possible. Because then what you have is Pulisic at right wing. Then you have most likely will have Kovacic on the right of the midfield three. And then you have Reece James playing at right back. And so what you do is you get, when Chelsea are attacking, you get either Conte or Kovacic to cover for Reece James, who goes up and actually becomes the right winger. And then Christian Pulisic drifts inwards. So now that would ensure that the Liverpool backline is completely pegged back, including Sadio Mane, who would have to track back against Reece James. And Pulisic would be hanging out in and around the penalty area. Again, not in his favorite position of left wing or his best position of left wing, but I do think that it's worth gambling because Werner on that left wing playing off of Giroud just, for me, is too enticing not to do it, especially against, you put him up against the partnership of Gomez and Alexander-Arnold, who are great on the ball, but not as solid defensively as Robertson and Van Dijk. I think for me, it's a no-brainer. But I can also see him, if Pulisic doesn't start and he does go with the front three of Havertz, Giroud, and Werner, then what you do have is Havertz at right wing, a left-sided player who does love to come inside, and then you have Reece James overlapping him, and Conte and Kovacic supposedly covering for Reece James.
All right, last thing before we wrap up this show, I want to ask you, what is your score prediction for this game?
Like I said, I'm gonna predict an explosive game, 3-2 Chelsea.
Ah, that's positive. That's thinking optimistic. I am going to go just a little bit less optimistic than you and go with a 2-2. I think that, I'm going to go with a 2-2 because I'm feeling like a 3-4 sort of game again. But whenever, you know, whenever you expect these big high intensity matches, those big hyped up matches to be crazy, they never are. And so I'm kind of going in the middle of a 0-0 and a 4-4. It's a 2-2.
Okay. I see it. I think we this is probably the most likely time for us to get an actually explosive game, though. And I mean, even 2-2 it's up there. Four goals in a game, it's up there. But this is the time for us to have that kind of game because you have Liverpool, who you know they're going to create chances, but who are looking more vulnerable in the back than they've ever done not under Jurgen Klopp, but since Van Dijk's introduction to that back line. And you have a Chelsea team who now, going forward, this is one of the better teams that we've had in a long time. It's just a matter of, can we actually like gel enough to create chances? If we create chances, I have no doubt that we're going to take them. Because not only do we have fantastic finishers in Havertz, Giroud, Pulisic, Werner, not only do we have that, but we have that fear factor of a striker who is going to draw a lot of attention from the back line, leaving others to be slightly more open than they would have been last season or in previous games against a team like Liverpool. I can't wait for this game Sunday. I think it should be great. I think we should do well in it. I am curious to see if this is going to be one of those games where we play well and lose or what. It's just so up in the air. It's hard to predict. And we're also really early in the week and we haven't got injury updates through Lampard's press conference or anything like that. So we shall see.
We'll see how it goes.
as we close, I'm going to ask you one last question, and then we'll be done for the day. We have signed 7 players: Malang Sarr, Thiago Silva, Hakim Ziyech, Timo Werner, Ben Chilwell, Kai Havertz, and Javier or Xavier Buyamba. Don't know how to say his name. That's my best guess. Who are you most excited by?
I mean, the obvious, like the big one in there is Havertz, right? That's always like the one people stick the most to. But I'm going to say Timo Werner is the one that I am zoned in on. I mean, to have a focused, proven striker, and I love Tammy Abraham last season. That is good for a young, up-and-coming striker. But to have Werner come in, who was second only to Lewandowski in the Bundesliga last season, is incredible.
That makes sense. Just, I think
I'm at a loss for words for how much I'm excited about Werner. It's hard to find good strikers, I think.
And to get him for the price that we got him too, it's insane.
Yeah. All right, how about you?
I think I'm going to say this. I'm going to say Havertz, and not because he was technically the biggest signing or anything like that. I haven't really watched a whole lot of Bundesliga over the past few seasons, or ever really. Havertz is incredibly highly rated. Like, people are saying that this guy is a future Ballon d'Or winner, or he should at least be in the top 3 and things like that. And I'm like, okay. And you know how all those like, welcome to Chelsea, Kai Havertz highlights videos. That's the most that I've like seen consistently of him. So I think I'm just most excited to actually make up my mind about him, because Hakim Ziyech, I watched at least 2 full performances last season, and I saw plenty of their Champions League run the year before when they went all the way up to the semifinals. Ben Chilwell, seen plenty of him in the Premier League. Thiago Silva, yeah, excited about him. And I actually think he's probably going to be one of our key players, but he's not a signing that's going to last 4 or 5 years. He's going to be a 1 to 2 season signing. It's Havertz, but probably not for the reason that most people are excited about him. People are just excited that he's this fantastic talent. For me, I'm just excited to like actually get to witness the hype and make up my mind on it. And actually, I don't want to buy into the hype just yet, because what that allows us to do is also really come down hard on him when he has a bad performance or not what we expect from him, etc. And so, to me, he's a 21-year-old kid who's highly rated. He's coming to this team. Frank Lampard is backing him to be an absolute hit at Chelsea from some of the reports that I've been reading and some of the podcasts I've been listening to. Kai Havertz is supposedly to be is going to be the man that, or the player that Frank Lampard wants to build the team around. And so the whole world can't be wrong, right? Now, things don't go right. There's all that stuff. But I'm just excited to see what the hype is about. So this is where we're going to end today's show, and we'll be back at it next week to review the Liverpool game and talk about whatever game is next. If you've ever listened to any of our episodes, you will know that we absolutely have no clue how to end an episode. So in a very disorganized fashion, I'm here to tell you that I'm Maddie.
I've been Daniel.
And it has been an absolute pleasure to talk Chelsea and the brand new season with you guys. Join us next week. So, listeners, welcome to Academy of Blues. It is good to have you back, or it's good to be talking to you again. Before we move forward, we want to let you know to subscribe to Academy of Blues, wherever you get your podcast, because this is the perfect time to do it. It's a brand new season. You have a new show to listen to or a show that you're coming back to, and we're going to be at it all season long. So subscribe, follow us, and listen to every episode that we have. Also, you can send us any questions, emails, topics, all that good stuff by emailing academyofblues@gmail.com. And if you're on Instagram, follow us at Academy of Blues. Fantastic.
I'm going to turn this back.